Welcome to Indie Game Business, where you'll learn to navigate the industry with ease. This show is produced by the Powell Group, the leading business consulting firm in the gaming industry. Visit us online at indiegame.business to learn about our online digital events. We have some amazing sessions with people in the gaming industry, and you can participate for free and purchase inexpensive passes to our industry-leading business-to-business system. Now, here we go, Indie Game Business. In session two of day one, it's awesome. I want to introduce Melissa Chaplin. She's a freelance consultant for ICO. She can tell you all about that stuff. And her talk is about standing out and how to pitch your game. There's so many ways to not pitch your game, and she wants to talk to you about that and tell you how to properly do it. So, Melissa, take it away.
Awesome. I've got a bit of echo in the audio, by the way, just to let you know. So it might be a way to prevent it. But hello, welcome. I really have a lot of echo, actually.
Do you have something open that?
No.
You might have the live stream open somewhere. That's what I'm guessing. The live stream started and maybe you had Facebook or YouTube or something open?
No, I have nothing else. Give me one second. Sorry about this, everyone. There we go. I think that might be fixed. Could you say something?
Fixed? 1, 2, 3?
Yes.
Perfect. Excellent.
Thanks for that. Sorry, everyone, for the false start. What is a virtual talk without some technical issues? But welcome. It is fantastic to be here. And thank you so much to everyone who's come for this. And thank you to Indie Game Business for having me. Thank you to Dan for hosting and being here for the very much needed technical support. I'm really excited to talk to you all today about standing out, how to pitch your game. So to continue what we're going to cover today, we're going to talk a little bit about pitch structure, what goes into a pitch, and in particular, I'm going to focus in on the things that people often miss out or gloss over that are really important. And I'm going to explain to you why you need to include those things, what a publisher or a scout or a fund is looking for from those aspects and how to address them. I'm going to talk a bit about tailoring your pitch, either for that specific scout or having multiple versions of the same pitch and whether that's appropriate and how you can do it. I'm going to talk a little bit about the secret ingredient, which is the thing that everyone wants from a pitching talk, is what is the secret sauce that we can add to our pitch that's going to help us to win over people and persuade them to give us money. And finally, I'm going to talk a little bit more about kind of developer and scout relations and how to navigate those relationships, how to work with scouts to have the most, rewarding relationship possible. So why am I talking about this? A little bit about me to introduce myself. I'm Melissa Chaplin. I've got 10 years experience specifically in communications and marketing more generally. I actually have a PhD in communications that is a publicly available 200-page document. If anyone wants to read it, it will be, I think, the fourth or fifth person ever. For the past 4 years, I've been really focused in games, particularly the indie game space. I've been very fortunate to work with a number of fantastic developers and on a bunch of incredible titles. I've consulted on over 50 games. I should do a recount at some point because it's quite a few over that now, but I did stop counting after that. And I focus primarily on the go-to-market strategy, meaning everything about your business, your publishing strategy, and your marketing strategy, how to position your game. I have experience scouting for original IP in everything from the kind of under 50K sort of funding prototypes, much more indie, scrappy range of the spectrum, to up to about 20 million dollars to market, which I would say is kind of double A space. I would put triple A a bit higher than that. So if you're in the chat and you are someone who is like, oh, but our game is, you know, an 80 million, 100 million game, I'm very sorry. That is a little bit out of my experience, but I will do my best to be helpful to you as much as I can. And finally, a fun fact about myself is I'm a mediocre practitioner of Wing Chun Kung Fu. I'm working towards my first sash. It's got nothing to do with the presentation. I just really wanted to share that. So a very important disclaimer that I would need to do for this presentation, I know you all know this, but I need to say it, is that every scout and every publisher is different. There is no one size fits all. There is no silver bullet for pitching your game that is going to mean that you, you know, automatically get handed the money. If I had a like specific sort of magical spell that you could cast on scouts to make them say, yes, absolutely, we're going to sign your game, I would be, first of all, a very, very wealthy woman indeed, but also I'd be lying to you. So there isn't a real kind of secret magic word. There are things you can do to help with the process though. And so hopefully at the end of this talk, you'll have some idea of things that you can do to improve your pitch and to maximize your chances of making it successful. So what is a pitch? And I know different people have different ideas, different levels of experience with this, but I think it's worth covering because it can actually be quite a different process depending on who you're going through it with and how they've structured it. So for example, some places might have you do, you know, a live presentation, not a million miles from what I'm doing now, where you work through a slide deck and explain your game, and then they go away and think about it afterwards. Some places they might want you to submit a deck and submit all your materials, and then if they're interested, they'll call you. And sometimes you might even wind up doing an impromptu pitch in person, like at an event where someone says, oh yeah, go on then, show me. And you have to off the cuff sort of improvise. I'm going to use the term quite broadly in this talk to cover all of those sorts of scenarios. And I am going to use it to mean any time when you are asking someone to give you money for your game. So it's pretty broad, but hopefully we can cover a lot of eventualities there. I'm going to spend a lot of time in this talk telling you things that you probably don't want to hear and giving you bad news, and I'm sorry about that. I promise it comes from a place of love. The things that people miss out of pitches are often the things that we feel awkward about talking about, we don't really want to cover, and we feel uncomfortable with. And those are obviously missing when you are a scout who is looking at a pitch, right? Everyone loves to talk about their game. Everyone wants to talk about the project. If you don't want to talk about the project, something's seriously wrong. They want to talk about the lore and the characters and the gameplay loop, and that is all great and really important. There are other things you need to include, and one of them is talking about your team. So it's kind of horrible, isn't it? Like, we hate talking about ourselves. We hate, it feels like you're doing an icebreaker challenge on your first day of a new job, and it's awkward and no one enjoys it. I felt excruciating doing the introducing myself slide, like, you know, 5 minutes ago. But you do need to do it. You do need to talk about your team specifically. And the reason why is nothing to do with like how nice you are, whether or not you and the scout are going to be besties or anything like that. It's all to do with how risky it is to invest in your game. So I know that sounds quite cold. I don't mean it to. Obviously, personality is an aspect, right? Like, everyone wants to work with people they like, you know, it will be a relationship. If a publisher signs you, then they're going to have to work with you personally. And if you come across like you're horrible people, that would probably be a mark against you. But really what they're looking at is how reliably can the team that you have make the game that you're proposing? How much experience do you have? How many of you are there? If you're a solo developer who's never released a project, obviously that's much more risky to invest in than if you're a team of, say, 15, 20 people who have done loads of work for hire. So you do definitely need to talk about the team, and I would advise you not to relegate that to kind of, you know, an appendix or something. You need to be comfortable with it and have information about projects you've worked on, if you've released anything as a team before. If you're a less experienced team, I would definitely consider both the good the project and the good the pitch, making sure you have some advisors who are a bit more experienced who would be happy to be included on that slide. That is something I've seen done, and it can be very successful as a way of kind of making publishers feel like, oh, look, there are some safe pairs of hands here who are giving this their mark of approval. The next thing that people feel very uncomfortable talking about, and this is kind of wild to me in pitching processes, is money. And I totally get, again, why people feel uncomfortable talking about money, depending on your background, how you're brought up, what culture you're from. It can be a very uncomfortable, unnerving topic to broach. I'm British, and famously, the British are bad at talking about money. You do have to, though, if you are pitching your game. You have to be prepared to say how much money you're asking for and why. You should have a budget breakdown. You don't necessarily have to have that in super detail in your pitch. You can have it as a separate document that you also send along afterwards. But you want a timeline of production, you want a budget breakdown, and you want something that looks sensible. I am aware that there are times in negotiation and in life where any conversation about money, you don't want to be the first person to say a number, right? Pitching a game is not that situation. I've been in pitches where someone really just would not say a number. And it wasn't just me, I was there with a colleague. And we were like, yeah, but how much money do you want for the game? And he kept kind of avoiding the question. Oh, well, I don't know, how much are you going to give me? Didn't want to say. When, you know, scouts aren't trying to trick you when they look for that. They're not trying to kind of pull the wool over your eyes or mess with you or, you know, try and like shortchange you or anything like that. They need to know, because they can't say yes to a question mark. And you need to know how much money you're asking for, because the last thing you would want to do is go through this whole process and then find out actually you'd asked for, you know, 200, 300K less than you actually need. So you do need to do that. You do need to have that in place. Really work through those numbers quite thoroughly and be prepared to discuss them kind of candidly without flinching. I'm going to have a really frustrating answer to this question that a lot of people ask about pitching the game, which is, do you need a playable? And the answer to that is maybe, probably, almost certainly, yes. This goes back to the same question as what we were talking about before when you're, you know, when you're discussing the team. It's all about risk. And, you know, in a similar way, in the book publishing world, right, if you're a new author who's never released a book before, publishers and even agents will not offer you a deal unless you already have a full manuscript written. Similarly, if you are, you know, a less experienced studio, it's highly, highly unlikely that you would get a deal without having some sort of vertical slice, demo, something playable. It is frustrating, I know, to hear that, because it's sort of that similar question as people ask about jobs. You know, how can I get experience if no one will give me a job to get the experience? How can I make a playable if I don't have the budget to make the playable? You know, it's I need the money so that I can do that. There are like grants that people can apply for. I mean, here in the UK, there's the UK Games Fund that gives people, I think it's up to £25,000 to develop that prototype. There are other kind of similar things in different spaces. So if you're at a point where you're like, no, we really need some more capital in order to get to that playable stage, I would definitely be looking at that before I really dug into seriously pitching. Because if you don't have a playable, first of all, it's a big question mark of what the game's going to feel like. It makes it much more of an unknown to anyone that you're pitching it to. But beyond that, it's also, you know, a question of, can you make this game? And I know that's not necessarily a nice thing to hear, but unfortunately it is the case that, you know, particularly this year, more than any year previously that, you know, I've been working, money isn't as cheap as it used to be. And a lot of that is down to conditions that are outside of all of our control, unless someone's going to tell me that, you know, there's various very high profile politicians in the chat that have actually more control of the economy than I do. It's outside of all of our control. We can't kind of, you know, change the interest rates and things like that. But it does mean that investment is very challenging to get. And a lot of companies are a bit nervous about risk profile. A playable is one way to reassure them about that risk. When I say comps here, what I mean is your comparisons. What do you say your game is like? The reason I want to talk about this is because I see a lot of comparisons in decks. Well, either they aren't there, or I see ones that don't really make sense to me. So you get people who do comparisons purely based on the genre of the game, right? Oh, it's a roguelike, so it's like Hades, or it's like Cult of the Lamb. If your game doesn't gel with the comparisons, it can be quite difficult for people, because that little bite-sized, snappy, it's like X meets Y formula is often the thing that sticks in people's heads. And therefore, it's often the thing that the person you're talking to will go away and mention to their team. So it's really important you think carefully about getting this right. And I see them done wrong, I would say, more than I see them done right. When you think about your comparison, think about the feel of the game. Think about the profile of the person who plays it. Not just the genre and not just the mechanics, because ultimately, mechanics are one aspect, they're not the whole aspect, and they're not really necessarily what players are going to be thinking about when you pitch the game. So you need to think of it from more of a sort of marketing perspective. The reason why I've got a picture here of a cinema and a library is because I also want to encourage people to think outside of the box of just game comparisons when you come up with your comps. I did a novel writing course earlier this year, and we all had to come up with comparisons for, you know, what each other's stories were like for them to pitch to agents. And one of the strongest ones, and I really hope this book gets published because it's fantastic, is a woman whose book was described as The Last of Us meets Lolita. It's a fantastic, like, you know, what I've read of it is fantastic, but it's a fantastic pitch because it sticks with you and it makes you say, like, wow, like, I want to know what that looks like. I'm interested. If you come to me and you say something is, oh, it's a bit of, and you just reel off popular indie games, right? If you're like, oh, it's like Hades and Hollow Knight and Undertale and The Cult of Lamb, and you're just listing like big hit indies, that doesn't really stick with me. If you come to me and you say, hey, I've got a game for you. It's like Bridgerton meets Mortal Kombat. I'm like, oh, okay. You've got my interest. You know, you've captured my imagination there, and I'm going to remember that. And I'm going to remember that to explain it to my colleagues. So really think carefully about your comparisons. I've got this gif of No Face being swept away because I think this is how social media increasingly feels for me. And this kind of captures the essence of that mood. And I know this is what a lot of devs go through. There is a question of how much of a public presence on social media does your game need at the point where you're pitching it, right? Do you need to have a you know, kind of huge presence on TikTok in order to successfully pitch your game? And I have, yes, Pitch Your Game listed here, who run fantastic competitions that let people highlight work in progress. This TikTok, Instagram, X, which I need to remember is no longer Twitter, and also Kickstarter. Now, some publishers will, you know, appreciate seeing something that already has like a fan base, right? A built-in, like, you know, hype around it already. Oh, we have, you know, millions of video views on TikTok of our like development process. But it's a double-edged sword. First of all, it doesn't always translate into a deal. There are games that perform phenomenally well on social media and then are not successful in the pitching process. There's no guarantee. Second of all, some publishers will actually find it off-putting if you have already kind of taken their thunder a bit with the game. You need to kind of tread carefully, because sometimes you only get to announce your game once, right? And that's a very key marketing beat for a game. If you've already put tons and tons of stuff in the public sphere through social media and everyone's seen it, some scouts and publishers might find it a little bit off-putting because it's like, well, there's a huge opportunity that we've now missed, and if it doesn't go extremely well, you've sort of kind of taken the rug out from underneath yourself. That is not to say that you necessarily don't want to do all of these things. You know, if you feel very strongly like, actually, you know what, I think our game is going to be fantastic on TikTok and I think that it's worth the time and I love doing it, by all means. But what I would also remember is that all of these things, except for Pitch Your Game, which is like a, you know, unique kind of event that you can kind of focus in on, But running a TikTok and an Instagram and an X feed, or doing a successful Kickstarter if you're trying to raise money for that prototype, they're all full-time jobs and huge marketing undertakings in themselves. I know that there are people, I mean, I personally know people who are full-time TikTok influencers and it's all they do. And it's a staggering amount of work in the background just to get it done. So don't let these things distract you from the important part of making the pitch, making the game, you know, which is what you're really there for. Ultimately, sometimes these things can be helpful, but sometimes it could just be noise or productive procrastination. So tread carefully. It's not a definitely don't do it, but it's a proceed with caution would be my advice for all of these things. Tailoring your pitch is a bit of a tricky one. And the only reason I say this is because I've seen this go wrong. Should you make a different version of your pitch for every publisher you talk to and like really personalize it the way that you would write a different cover letter for every job that you apply for, right? Yes, you should be aware of what a publisher focuses on, right? If you've got a publisher like Fellow Traveler who are really keen on narrative, you might want to emphasize the narrative of your game a little bit more than you would for a different sort of publisher, just as an example. But the reason I put within reason on this slide and the thing that I would want you to be cautious about is you don't just deliver the pitch that you think they want to hear. Don't try and second guess to the point that you're losing all identity of what your actual project is and what you want to make. And it kind of comes back to that, you know, similar to the money question that we went to before. If you have a game and it's going to cost $1 million to make, don't try and pretend it's a $5 million game because you think that's what they're looking for. I've been in pitches before where you say, oh, does it have multiplayer? And they kind of hesitate, they freeze, and they go, do you want it to have multiplayer? It can have multiplayer. Don't do that. Stay true to the vision of what you want to make and be as open as possible and as kind of forthright as possible with them. Because, I mean, thinking about it this way, I know it's very easy to say this when you're not in the position of being the person pitching. But imagine if you tailor your pitch and just say exactly what they want to hear. Yes, you know, what you really wanted to make was a narrative adventure inspired by Return of the Obra Dinn. But you got swept away with the pitching process and you've actually proposed a giant online multiplayer with loads of UGC and, you know, kind of live service and so on. You're not going to be making the game you wanted to make. Even if you get the money, it's kind of a Pyrrhic victory. So don't let yourself be swayed too much. Obviously, use whatever format they have, right? If they have a specific you know, form, as some publishers do on their website that you have to fill in and they ask for specific things, stick to that to the letter because that just shows you're paying attention. But don't change the fundamental project. The one thing I would say, though, in terms of having different versions of your pitch is you should have a different one for delivering if you're speaking alongside it and it's a meeting, you're presenting more like what I'm doing now versus something that you would leave behind when you are kind of, you know, sending it on. So something that you present, you don't really want to have too much wordiness on the slides because it's just going to be awkward and it's going to push you into reading from the slides. Even if you're quite a good presenter, it's just too tempting when the words are just there. Make a separate version that is a leave behind that is intended to be looked at without you present, because the odds are that whoever you're speaking to will need to go and discuss the project internally. It's highly unlikely that you'd go into a pitch meeting, present the pitch, and at the end of that meeting, someone would say to you like, yep, take the money, brilliant. Like I'd be very surprised if that happened. There'll be other stakeholders, there'll be people who need to see it. Probably they'll need to have discussions, maybe come back to you with some more questions, look at their budgets. So don't expect to then send over something that's all pictures because it'll be decontextualized. Scouts receive hundreds and hundreds of pitches. They go into loads of these meetings. So have a version that's just got everything that you would say kind of written out and presented so it will stand alone and be kind of a good leave behind for you. This is the bit of this presentation that everyone's always like super excited about and everyone is keen on, which is like, what's the secret ingredient? Like, what is the thing that's like, you know, make my deck sparkle and, you know, really kind of stand out to people? And it's, you know, it's the title of the presentation. So I'd be lying to you all if I didn't have something to put on this. There isn't a silver bullet, but ultimately the secret ingredient is your game and your IP. And I'm very keen on thinking about games as intellectual property, thinking about them in the sense of franchises, even standalone games. And the reason for this is that that is the thing that will really move people and stick with people. And it's being able to boil your game down to something that is a snappy pitch and a good concept and a recognizable identity of its own. You know, if you take something, regardless of, you know, if you enjoy it or not, just it's kind of a very popular IP. Take something like Harry Potter. That's very easy to boil down in very simple terms. What's it about Wizard School? I can even boil an IP down to drawing a couple of lines on a page. I could communicate it to you just by drawing the thunderbolt and the glasses, and that's it. Think about your game in terms of an IP, not mechanics, not genre, but what is the actual IP that you're selling? And if you're not sure if you have an IP or not, I do have a way for you to think about it that I personally find very helpful when thinking about pitches and thinking about if something has the potential to become an IP. And that is what I like to call the t-shirt test. I've got some pictures here of t-shirts of a few fantastic games. Got like Hollow Knight, Frog Detective, Undertale. And all of these are pretty instantly recognizable, right? And I'm sure there are people in the chat who have video game t-shirts in their wardrobe. I definitely do. You know, if you don't and your, you know, sense of fashion is too pure for a video game t-shirt, then you know, good for you. But I'm not above a good video game t-shirt. But when you're looking at your own game, try and think about it in these terms. Could you see it on a t-shirt? Could you boil it down to something that could go on a t-shirt? If it's all just free assets and the core of the game is just a mechanic, you can't really put a mechanic on a t-shirt. I couldn't walk around wearing a t-shirt that says roguelike with farm sim elements. That's not an identity. It might be interesting for the game design. It might be part of what sells your game, but it's not the full story. Whereas very strong IP actually often has, you know, something that's really can be boiled down to quite simple design and quite strong visual identity. And this is an opportunity really to work with, you know, your artist, your concept art, you know, think about it carefully, because I think this is something that makes the difference between decent pitch, an okay pitch, and a great pitch, is how much does that identity stay with you? How much does it feel like it could be more of a franchise, something that could be, you know, have sequels or a TV tie-in or merchandise? And I'm not saying that that's the whole story, obviously it isn't, but I do think it's something that a lot of people miss when they are pitching their game and talking about it. So that's apply the t-shirt test to your games. And if you're not sure if it passes the t-shirt test, ask some trusted friends, like, do you think this could be put on a t-shirt? See what they say. I need to have a little bit about how to interact with scouts and publishers, because I sometimes think that whenever money is involved in these sorts of conversations, you get this sort of vibe of like, oh, business, guys in suits, you know, American Psycho, maybe some serial killing, who knows? But I want to reiterate that scouts and publishers, by and large, are lovely people who are very passionate about games. You know, they are there to be helpful to you. They're not trying to trip you up. And if you do sign with someone, it's, you know, going to be a long relationship, right? Probably years, where you are like, you know, kind of working together for the good of the project, right? And in a good scout developer relationship, a good publisher developer relationship, everyone wants what's best for the game. Sometimes that might mean what they say is what's best for this game is that you sign with someone else. And that's also okay. But don't don't feel like you have to go into these sorts of conversations like mega guard up. Don't feel like you have to be super businesslike. Obviously, be polite, be professional. But don't feel that you have to, you know, kind of put on some sort of persona. Just be yourself, enjoy the conversation. It's not, you know, it's not the same culture as if you were kind of, you know, doing a tech startup and you needed to get really like, you know, businessy and they're going to be really aggressive or anything like that. That's not been my experience in the culture of games. You know, you're going to be talking with someone who is in all likelihood like a friendly geek who loves video games, is lucky enough to work with them, is interested in your project and wants to be helpful. So, you know, I hope that's of comfort to you all.
Are you looking for a publisher for your game? Well, we have something special just for you. It's the most comprehensive listing of PC, console, and mobile publishers in the industry. Over 700 companies sorted by platform with links to their websites. You can get the list at www.powellgroupconsulting.com/publisher-list. And you can get it for free. Check it out.
I wish I could tell you that the first person you talk to and the first pitch you do is going to be successful and you'll never have to deal with rejection. All of us in life are likely to face rejection at some point, and it is highly likely that if you are pitching your game, you'll face probably several rejections. It isn't fun, and it can be very emotionally taxing. You know, it's when you make a game, it's part of yourself that you're putting out there creatively and you've put so much work into. And to have someone say, we don't want it, can feel like a real reflection on you. And you can take that and be really embittered by it or find it very like hurtful. However, there are ways to manage that process of rejection that work in your favor. Resist the urge to lash out in response. If you find yourself feeling upset or frustrated and you want to type out a kind of, you know, angry email, step away. Like step away for a couple of days. Don't do it. Even if you feel like you've received a rejection that's like, you know, rude or you're not happy about it or you feel like you were messed around, hold back from doing anything, because I have heard of tales of people getting quite bitter responses, quite unpleasant responses. First of all, like the scouts and the publishers, they're just people doing their job, they're doing their best. And there may be lots of reasons that they have to say no to your game that's nothing to do with your game, right? It could be to do with their scheduling and their resourcing. It could be to do with the fact that they've signed another game that's, you know, too similar in genre and they're not allowed to sign something that's so close. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that your game has no hope or anything like that. It doesn't mean that they are horrible people who don't get it and don't understand what's cool about your game. It might just be that it just didn't work out that time. It might be that they look at it and they're like, oh, this is great, but it's not for us. If you don't receive specific feedback, it can't hurt to ask. And I would always recommend that you do. If you do receive specific feedback, I would really encourage you to read it and take it on board as best you can, because you've got an expert there who has looked at your pitch. They've spent the time, like, you know, going through it. They've maybe played your playable and has taken the time to give you feedback. That's really valuable. So please do. I know scouts who take the time to try and give really detailed feedback, because even if they're saying no, they want the developer to take away something useful from that interaction and that experience. So do try and take it as much on board. But yes, the other major reason not to react badly if you get a no is games is a huge industry, right? It's a huge segment of the entertainment industry. There's a lot of money in this industry, but also everyone knows everyone. And I guarantee you, if you send an email that is unpleasant to someone, it will probably get around. people know. And also, there's every chance that you might want to come back to that publisher for a different project. You might want to talk to them about something else in future. Don't burn bridges unnecessarily. Try and be, you know, friendly and agreeable, because also, like, as I said, these are people just doing their jobs. There's no need for it. Even if you feel it, I totally get why it's very emotional for people when they get a rejection. But yeah, really try and like resist the urge to, you know, kind of lash out or anything like that. So just to kind of summarize a bit, and I have run quicker than I intended to, probably because I was a little bit nervous. I'll go through kind of what we've covered. So we've thought a bit about kind of pitches and structures and a few of the elements that are expected and needed in order for a publisher to sign and move you ahead, right? So a publisher is not going to be able to move forward if you didn't give them a budget. Like, it's highly, like, they're not just going to say, oh yeah, sure, here's a blank check. And so you will need those things. With that being said, like, you know, all publishers and scouts are different. You definitely need to kind of think about who your audience is whenever you're pitching your game. Make sure that you are speaking about it in a way that's going to resonate with them within reason. Don't try and kind of, you know, just tell people what they want to hear or what you think they want to hear, because 9 times out of 10 that will backfire. And remember, like, you know, if you get rejected, so do most people, right? You know, how many labels refuse to sign the Beatles? It doesn't mean that there's no hope for the project or anything like that. It doesn't mean that you are not going to find a publisher. It might mean that it's not necessarily the right time to pitch that game. It might mean that you need to think about like a pared back project. You know, if it's your first project and you're asking for like a huge amount of money, you might want to try and pitch a smaller, more kind of constrained project first that has some similar elements that lets you have you know, a base to build off of. And then once that's been successful, you can go back to that big game pitch and, you know, kind of try again. And then also what I would really, really encourage is take advantage of all of the free resources that are out there for pitching your game. There are publishers who put out their example pitch decks. There are podcasts. The Indie Game Business podcast has some absolutely incredible in-depth conversations with publishers, with scouts. Recently there was one with Josh Garrity, who works at Secret Mode, which I'm going to plug because not just because Josh is a friend of mine, but also because it's an absolutely fantastic podcast. And he goes into absolute detail of like the pitching process, what it's like, what he's looking for from his end. And I think it's about 2 hours long. You get tons of information there, just freely available. There's another one recently all about that issue of what is an IP, where it was an interview with Christian Fonsbeck, who's like a expert in IP from a narrative perspective, does a lot of kind of narrative consulting, you know. And so what I would encourage you to do is like, don't just go away from this talk and be like, oh, well, I've attended that one talk. Like, take advantage of the huge breadth of things that are out there as resources for, you know, indie developers who are looking to pitch their game. And then finally, I would be remiss if I didn't also say, feel free to reach out and contact me if, you know, if you want to talk about it, if you want to potentially get your pitch deck reviewed, you know, if you just want kind of a listening ear while you vent about how soul destroying the process is. I am available on Meet to Match, but I'm conscious that these, you know, these are quite time pressured situations. And sometimes if you have a lot of other things on during that time, you can't necessarily get the Meet to Match slots that you want. So, you know, feel free to, you know, send me an email, and get in touch, and I'd be happy to kind of chat a bit about your game. As I'm freelance at the moment, I have more flexibility than I usually would. So thank you very much.
I would like to say that the first thing that came to mind when you said don't burn bridges needlessly, in my head the response was yes, burn them with a purpose. If you're gonna do it right. But no, that is fantastic. That was excellent feedback, because you're right. This industry, we all do know everybody else. And if we don't, we can find them in like 2 phone calls.
Yep.
lots of questions. So we're going to get through as many as we can. And, if, you know, for folks out there watching, if you have more questions, just dump them in whichever platform you're watching on, which according to our statistics is about 99% of you on YouTube. First one up, do you recommend a funding ask for an equity play that gets you to a milestone such as a vertical slice or a full-blown game? I've heard to raise 12 to 18 months and others raise the next key milestone.
I'm going to give a really annoying answer, which is kind of maybe, and it depends. And I know that's a really frustrating answer to give.
It's like the motto of this show though, Melissa. It's all good.
Yeah. It's a how long is a piece of string answer, and it very much depends on what your options are, what kind of game it is, what you're looking for in finances, how long you need. If you're pitching to a publisher, like, you know, I wouldn't pitch for kind of half the cash, or kind of 12 months of the cash. You might want to go through a separate set of fundraising for getting a vertical slice ready, which is its own thing, and you might want to have that in order to then pitch for a publisher. And we all live in the real world, right? Sometimes there are games that run over budget, things change, and you sign to the publisher and you have to go back and say, like, actually we need some more than we thought, and you'll have that conversation and you work it out. And they might think of things that you can pull back on and scope that you can reduce in the game to try and bring that number down. But if you're going to a publisher and you're pitching in that sense, as opposed to like VC funding for a studio, then you're probably going to want to say, like, this is what it takes to release this project.
And this also goes to the whole, it's good to have multiple versions of your pitch deck too.
Yes.
Because
yeah, the
situations do change.
Yeah. If you're pitching like to a fund, that is a slightly different setup than if it's a publisher. In terms of what support they might offer, it could be different. Although some funds do kind of function almost exactly like a publisher, be conscious of what they offer. Like if you go in and you go into a pitch and you're saying, yeah, what we really need is marketing support, and it's something that doesn't offer marketing support, it's a fund that's like, no, you need to sort that out yourself. That's, going to not look like you've done your research.
So from our friend Derek Liu over on YouTube, do mock-up trailers help pitches, even if they have no gameplay footage, but they have art, music, storyboards, etc.?
I think this is a personal preference thing. Also, hi, Derek. I like this question because I know where it's coming from. For me, I talked to someone recently about pitch decks, and they said, like, you've got to have the magic. You've got to have, like, the rock and roll. You've got to have the wow factor. Even if you're just pitching, like, business services, right, you need to leave people with a bit of that wow. And I think that a mock-up trailer can do that if it's done well. Likewise, kind of things like concept art and so on can really move the needle just in terms of that emotive effect. The thing about games is that, there'll be business decisions. They'll be driven by forecasting. They'll be driven by market trends. But also it will be driven by like the feelings of how someone felt looking at your pitch. Did they get that magic? And I think a mock-up trailer can be a really good way of inspiring that and helping people to kind of see the vision as a whole rather than kind of seeing it flat on the page. So, I'm not against them. Obviously, like if you have gameplay footage and things, that can be stronger. And I wouldn't say that it's a make or break thing. If you don't have the money to put one together and you don't have the skills to put one together, you aren't very close friends with someone like Derek who's got those skills, then I wouldn't beat yourself up over not having one. But I think that they can be fantastic for that like heartstring tug that you might want.
All right, so I'm gonna skip down the list here and ask one while I still have it top of mind. You talked a lot about talking about your team in your pitch. Mm-hmm. How does it change if you're a solo dev?
Pitching as a solo dev is challenging. Obviously your overheads are a lot smaller because you're one mouth to feed. But also it's going to be really high risk and people are going to see it as really high risk because like if you're a solo dev and you get sick, then that's it. Everything stops because you're that one person. If you're a solo dev who's not released a game before, that's even higher risk. What I would recommend, even if you're doing that, is that you might have like costed and worked out who some contractors would be that you'd work with, right? Because even if you are a solo dev, you might be working with other people as well. I would also definitely encourage you to make sure that you had advisors who were experienced in the industry and, you know, had some of that weight that they could add and would be comfortable, like obviously ask them first, but would be comfortable being put on a slide deck to say, you know, look, there are people involved to your faith in this project. It's not just me. But yes, it will be hard. I don't want to kind of, you know, mince my words on it. As a solo dev, pitching will be tough because at the minute in particular, because of global socioeconomic factors that none of us have in our control, right? Like companies are particularly risk averse with investment.
More so than usual.
Yeah.
So for Jawad on YouTube, when would it be too late to pitch to publishers? This is a good one. For example, 6 months until game completion with perhaps only the announcement marketing beat used.
I mean, it depends on a publisher, right? Sometimes people will just provide what's called finishing funds where a game is mostly done and they just need help to get over the line and for marketing and things like that. Like that is a thing that exists. It would be framed slightly differently and different publishers will react to it differently. So, you know, I'd make it very clear when you were talking to them that was the situation you're in, and be kind of realistic about what it is you're looking for and what you need. Some publishers will like it because they'll be like, oh, that's great. It's, you know, much less risky. You know, the game's pretty much there. It just needs, you know, kind of to push over the finish line. Some publishers might feel like they're not getting enough input and opportunity to shape the process and things like that. 6 months, I mean, like I said, I started out in games doing marketing strategy. If you came to me and you said, oh, we're just starting on our whole marketing and the game's coming out in 6 months, I would look very nervous indeed. So, you know, you'd preferably want to have thought about these things quite a long time ahead of that.
All right, along those lines, we're seeing a lot of, especially like indie games from publishers only being announced like a month, maybe 3 months before they actually launch.
Yep.
Is that a trend that you see continuing, or are we going to phase back to our usual 12 to 18 months?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I think it depends on the title and how confident they are in that, you know, kind of loop, and also what they have available, what the resources are like internally, and, you know, what they think is going to be best. There are some games that benefit from just a really punchy, you know, 1-2 and the game is out. Whereas other games, you know, benefit more from having a slow burn to accumulate things like Steam wish lists. So I'd take it on like a title by title basis. I mean, for example, you know, Hades 2 got announced a while back. You know, I know that it's kind of, I did read an article that was going to go into like early access maybe at the end of this year. I certainly hope so, because I'm really excited about that game. And then obviously it'll be a while in early access before the game comes out. So, you know, that's quite a long build up. And that's a game that's, you know, going to be extremely anticipated. So I don't think it's necessarily all one way or the other.
So from a look back on YouTube, when you pitch a demo build, do you need only placeholder art and mechanics, or does it need to show the actual art style you are going with as a selling point as well?
I think like if you can put it in like the art style that you're going for, that's always going to be more illustrative, and it's going to help again with that sort of giving the overall impression of what the game's going to be like to play and how the experience is going to be to the scout. Like people, when you play a prototype or a vertical slice or demo as a scout, you do it with grace and you do it knowing what it is. You don't look for it to be like a polished finished product. Like that's not, you know, no one's going in bad faith, right? But that said, we're all human, and the more you can do to make my suspension of disbelief easier, the better. Just because that's gonna, you know, filling in those blanks for me is gonna improve the kind of overall experience. So I know that some demos and pitches have started doing a thing where they have like a corner of it that is like all beautiful art style, and the rest of it is much more pared back, just to demonstrate like, yeah, but this is what it could look like. And I think that, you know, that can be a compromise that people use to try and, you know, get something over the line in terms of, you know, limited resources, but we need to have a playable. But yeah, obviously the more you can put in and the more you can get it close to what the finished product will look like, the more emotive it's going to be and the more convincing it's going to be to the person playing it, right?
So what is the process like to even get to the opportunity of doing a pitch?
Good question. It very much depends on the publisher. Different publishers have different situations. Usually there is like, you know, there'll be some sort of email to reach out to, or, you know, like a form to fill in on the website and things like that. But it can very much depend. And a lot of particularly big publishers will be quite hesitant with things like just accepting meeting requests, because they literally receive hundreds and hundreds of emails constantly. You know, I don't know any scouts who don't have inboxes that are just constantly full. You know, so it might be that you don't, you know, hear back or don't hear back for a while. It might be that it takes quite a long time to get something through. So what I would really encourage is to look very carefully at what each publisher is asking for and make sure you stick to that to the letter, because doing so will help them to process it. And also it will mean that it shows that you take it seriously and that you're paying attention and you care. And that's going to make it much more likely that you might get to the opportunity to have like a, you know, an actual meeting.
So from Sam on LinkedIn, I know you mentioned some important elements. Is there a preferred order of pitch sections to check off?
So I think some of this is like a personal taste preference thing. And, you know, some places will have like a pro forma. For me, I really like it if you give me like a kind of overarching what is the game quite early on, because then that colors everything else for me. And I just need to know like, okay, what are you pitching me? If you come to me and you say, right, okay, it's a, you know, it's an RPG about, you know, debutantes at a ball or something. Yeah, I need to have that elevator pitch quite early, because that colors everything. Sometimes I go into pitches and they push in quite early with things like the game design and the, you know, characters and the lore and loads of like background before they've even given me the basics of like, what is the game about? What is the elevator pitch? So I like to have that as like a grounding early on. In terms of other stuff, I think, you know, don't forget to introduce yourself, make sure that you kind of, you know, that people know who you are and what you are to the game. You know, so if there's like a couple of you, just have that early on as well. It's just kind of it's one of those things that sometimes gets lost in the fray a bit. I've seen people put like about themselves, like right at the back of decks before. And like, personally, I prefer it earlier. But beyond that, I think just make sure it's got a sensible flow. Usually people get to the, you know, kind of the less palatable financial discussions later on in a deck after they've already shown the game. I think that's kind of fair enough, because it's like, here's what we're going to make, and then here's what we need from you. Does make sense. Makes it, to quote Jeremy Strong, it makes sense dramaturgically.
So from Dan over on YouTube, how would you go about rescinding a pitch? Like, say a publisher is twiddling their thumbs for too many months, or makes an unrelated public business decision that rubs you the wrong way?
It depends. You know, I guess as it goes back to what you were saying earlier about like burning bridges purposefully. I mean, if you feel very strongly, like, you know, let's take an extreme hypothetical example. If a publisher, like, you know, did something that was deeply offensive to your personal values and ethics, and you're like, no, I could never work with these people. You know, hypothetically, I would send an email and just say, you know, there's been a, I don't know, even in that circumstance, and this might be me being British, I would probably just say, like, you know, due to a change in circumstance, we're not moving forward with this this process, you know, just to let you know. If it's been lots and lots of months, I mean, it might be that you weren't going to hear back anyway, so there's no need for that, like, you know, unnecessary conflict. Or if it's, you know, if it's just been too long, I would just move ahead with other things, really, and just leave it. I don't necessarily think you need to kind of send a like communication. If it's, you know, if you've had back and forth with them and you're in active communication and you, for example, decide to go with someone else, it'd be polite to say, like, you know, hey, just to let you know, we're moving forward with another partner. Thank you for your time. Something like that.
All right. I can go ahead and tell everybody we're going to have to move some of the questions over to the Discord, because we've got about 7 more minutes left and I have about 10 more questions left. So if we don't get it answered live here, Melissa's in the Discord. We'll get them answered over there. Next up, Bobby on YouTube. If the main selling point of the game is something novel, is it okay to ask a publisher to sign an NDA before pitching?
It's not really the done thing, is kind of the answer to that. It is highly unlikely. You know, they're not looking to steal your game. It's highly unlikely, and it creates a lot of, you know, additional paperwork and, you know, delays the process if you start kind of going with NDA. I mean, sometimes they might have like a mutual, an MNDA. You can ask, but it's definitely not the done thing, and it will rub some publishers up the wrong way. They'll see it as a bit of kind of like artificial barrier and a bit kind of like, you know, that you're coming in distrusting. It's highly unlikely that like there's something in your game pitch that they're gonna steal. Like that's, you know, it, yeah, I think I wouldn't be stressed about forcing them to sign an NDA.
And some of them will flat out refuse to do it too.
A lot of them will flat out refuse to do it. Yes. Like I would expect to get a no.
Is there an issue asking them kindly why you got a rejection and how you might improve?
No issue whatsoever. I would encourage you to do that. If you, you know, it might be that they can't provide it just because like of time constraints and so on. Or it might be that it, you know, that the reason why is something they can't really like discuss with you, if it's something to do with like their internal business operations or something like that, but you can always ask. You know, I think most scouts and publishers, like they want to be helpful. They're in this business because they love games, right? They're not here because they want to crush people's dreams. So yeah, for sure. Like you can always ask. Some of them might volunteer that as well. They might just give it to you anyway. But yeah, I know a lot of scouts who go to lengths to provide this sort of feedback to devs. And, you know, I think you can come away from a rejection having made like a firm contact and, you know, being on good terms with those people, then that's a huge victory, even if it wasn't like a, oh yes, here's the cash.
So from LinkedIn, for the most part, when talking about the team, other than traditional game developers, are there any other roles investors or publishers would like to see in a company? For example, an accountant, a lawyer, etc.
I've never come across that in a deck. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but for me, I've never come across a team that's like, hello, we're developing this game and here's our accountant. I would see that as kind of external to the pitching process. Like obviously your studio might have an accountant that you use, right? But I probably wouldn't need that in the pitch. That would be a little bit odd to me. It should be the people who are involved with like the making of the game. If you're a studio who's had previous like, you know, work and things like that, you might, for example, have like a community manager who's like a studio community manager. You might want to talk about that. You might want to talk about plans that you have for marketing the game, for example. It doesn't necessarily have to be what the publisher goes with, but it might make them excited to see what possibilities you've thought about. I always love to see it because I have a marketing background. But I don't think you need to be like, and we get our legal support from, you know, whoever. I think that would be, superfluous.
It's one of those that if the person is known, then maybe, but I've never seen that either. I can see it with a lawyer. I can't really see it with an accountant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit of a unusual one. I mean, hey, nothing against accountants. I'm married to one, but I've never seen one in a game pitch.
All right, from Shelly on YouTube, for a game with autistic players will roll out in the game market, revenue from business. All right, so a game for autistic players roll out. Mm-hmm. Is the pitch different when pitching to a tech investor versus a publisher?
Yes. Yeah, and they'll be thinking about it completely differently. I've worked at tech startups and, you know, have some insight onto the like kind of tech investment process, and I've got a housemate of mine who during the pandemic has a tech startup and does that whole world of VC investment and so on. They'll be thinking in different terms. I think they'll want to see something different. They're not necessarily thinking in those entertainment terms. They're thinking much more of as a business. And any legal agreement you'd have with them would be completely different because they're likely to want to invest in your business, not necessarily in the project. And like equity investment in a business versus like project investment in a game, are very different legally. And if you're looking into that, I would get advice specific to that rather than just doing kind of a game pitch at those people, because your legal position will be 100% different.
All right. We've got like 7 more questions, but we are out of time. So I'm going to transcribe these questions over into the Discord. So everybody's question is going to be addressed. If you aren't on the Discord, it's discord.gg/indiegamebusiness. We will get this going as soon as I get to start typing. But before then, we've got Indy coming up with our next talk, which is Things I Wish I Knew Before Starting My Own Indie Studio. And people are calling me. All right. So,
you're popular.
With that, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Indie Game Business. You can learn more about the show and our online business networking events at indiegame.business.